the Jewish people, are they drawing closer and closer to Jesus or getting further away? And what about the church? Is it embracing its Jewish roots? Is it rejecting Israel? We'll sort it out today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, last week, on our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 1 week ago, it was one of the most enjoyable shows I've done in my life. I tell you, every day being here on the radio with you is a joy. Many of you folks have mentioned that you can hear the smile in my voice when I tell friends it's a joy to be on the radio. They always tell you, we can tell. But last week was a joy among joys. Why? Because I got so many callers who differed with me, who had all kinds of different perspectives on Israel, the Jewish people, and even Jesus being our Messiah. And it was wonderful. So even though I've got some really important things I want to talk about, things on my heart that I want to unpack in these next couple of hours, I want to remind you that on Thursdays, our Thoroughly Jewish Thursdays here in the Line of Fire, that the phone lines are wide open for any questions you have regarding Israel, the Jewish people, Messianic prophecy, Jewish tradition, those kinds of things, any issues you have with me, anything you want to differ with me on in terms of my perspectives, this is the best day to call in. So the number is always 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Or you can post some questions on our Facebook page. Ask Dr. Brown, ask Dr. Brown on Facebook, and I posted a question of my own. Do you feel that the church, so this is obviously going to be whatever body you're part of or whatever churches you're involved with or whatever you're following, do you feel that the church is becoming more embracing of its Jewish roots or less embracing? Separate question, related but separate. Do you feel the church is showing more solidarity with the people of Israel today, or less solidarity? 866-34-TRUTH. I, of course, always have my finger on the pulse of Israel and the Jewish people as much as I can. I mean, we Jews are a diversified group of people around the world. There are religious, there are irreligious. There are passionate, born-again followers of Jesus, Yeshua. There are ultra-Orthodox Jews who, if they ever said the name of Jesus, would spit. There are secular Jews, wide-ranging. But, of course, as a Jew called to my people and called to the church and called to the nations, I'm always following things that have to do with larger trends and just trying to get an understanding, Lord, what are you doing? We're coming to the end of the year. We did some year-end reflections about what's happening in society and what to expect in 2012. I want to give you some year-end reflections today. Year-end reflections about things that are happening in Israel, things that I sense happening among the Jewish people as a whole, and things that I see happening in the church, positive things and negative things. So I want to do that today. Also, remember tomorrow, if you didn't hear the announcement, I'm really excited. I mean excited. To have Dr. John Lennox with me. So all of you listening Eastern Standard Time, that'll be 2 to 3 Eastern Standard Time. But this first hour, the entire hour, Dr. Lennox is an Oxford University professor. He is a leading mathematician. He has a great science background. He is a committed Christian. And he debates all the atheists, takes them on boldly, clearly, and graciously. He is in Charlotte for a few days and will be on the air with me. And then the second hour, we'll do our normal You've Got Questions, We've Got Answers. So please tell a friend, listen tomorrow, especially if you've got atheists, non-believing friends. This man is a genius. He's brilliant, and he's absolutely committed to the Lord. All right, back with some fascinating news from Israel. Disturbing, fascinating trend of what's to come.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. You know, I talked yesterday about being sons of Issachar from 1 Chronicles 12:32. The small group that was part of the army that helped turn the nation to David as king in Hebron. And these men, it doesn't mention that they were battle-tested. It doesn't mention that they had special weaponry. It said they understood the times and knew what Israel should do. Jesus rebuked religious leaders in his day for not understanding the times and the seasons. I would be the first to say that we have been guilty of all kinds of prophetic speculation for years. As long as I've been saved, 40 years now, we have been guilty in many of the churches I've been part of all types of prophetic speculation and trying to match this prophecy with this event. And I've told people for years, if you're going to keep a prophetic calendar, do it in pencil, because you're going to have to keep updating it. At the same time, I've seen that we as a body, believers, we have failed to understand the major trends and major seasons and understand what's happening in the world and know as God's people how to respond. And so it's only right for us to say, Lord, we want to be like sons of Issachar who understand the times and know what we as God's people should be doing. With our focus today on Israel and the Jewish people, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire. Let me just lay out a bunch of things for you, and then I'm going to expand on them. If you've been following news in Israel, you know about the rise of the radical religious right. Again, I'm going to expand on these things in a moment. I have been quite sure for many, many years that there will be an increasing radicalized religious right that will grow in Israel into a major power, to the point that the things that we read about in the Gospels and Acts, that many scholars say it never happened, it's a fabrication, it's exaggeration, we will see it lived out in front of our eyes in terms of the conflict with the radically committed, ultra-Orthodox Jewish establishment as it grows, and in particular, Jewish followers of Jesus, Yeshua. I expect to see that increasing the little trickle of events that have happened in Israel in recent days that have gotten national attention, even if the media in any way is blowing it out of proportion. This, to me, is a foretaste of what we can expect on a much larger level. I've felt it for many years. In fact, I'll tell you a fascinating story about that in a little while. Okay, I expect to see an increasing fascination in the Jewish community with a non-messianic Jesus. I expect to see in the coming year and in the coming years more and more recognition of Jesus being one of us, one of our own. My friend Rabbi Shmuley's new book coming out, Kosher Jesus, which I gave an endorsement for, saying I'm thrilled to see a rabbi re-embracing Jesus Yeshua as a fellow Jew and as a rabbi, while I disagree with just about every statement on every page, or I found something on every page to differ with. So Shmuley and I are looking forward to some lively discussions and debates about that. I see that as an increasing trend. I know he's been working on the book for years, but I see that as an increasing trend. Jewish acceptance of a non-messianic, non-divine Jesus. I expect to see the church as a whole, or I shouldn't say as a whole, large portions of the believing church becoming more and more comfortable with Jewish roots, becoming more and more comfortable with the understanding of the feasts and the holy days, becoming more and more comfortable with the recognition of the Jewishness of Jesus. I see that happening. I also see the pendulum swinging so that more and more bizarre fringe groups, some of them Jewish, some of them Gentile, but all putting an emphasis that will ultimately be more on Jewishness or some form of Jewishness or some distortion of Jewishness more than on Jesus. Jesus will be recreated. Many of the early heresies among the first believers will be coming back. Again, I've expected these things for years, and you see the trends increasing. So on the one hand, there's the positive embrace of the Jewish roots of the faith more and more by the church, things that would have been so foreign to many of us 30, 40 years ago, becoming much more commonly understood and recognized and embraced. At the same time, more and more fringe groups with fringe teaching denying the centrality of the simple gospel message and atonement through Yeshua alone and his death and resurrection and divine nature. We'll see more and more of those groups rising, mandatory Torah observance and even mixed in with Jewish mysticism and other things. I expect more and more of that. And at the same time, while I believe that young people are going to be catching on more and more to the importance of standing with Israel, I'm talking about believing young people, because that tends to be a void. That tends to be a major hole. That tends to be a blind spot with many young people today. I'll explain why in a little while. I do expect those really going after the Lord, seeking him earnestly, to catch a burden for Israel, and so for that generation gap to be lessened, because it tends to be the older generation that has more of a heart for Israel. I believe that solid support for Israel will remain strong in large segments of the body. At the same time, I expect an increasing anti-Israel position to arise within the body that will ultimately manifest itself in anti-Semitic ways. I've had this conversation many times with people, and again recently. Yes, you can be against the modern state of Israel without being an anti-Semite, but I am quite sure that the church is going to imbibe, many within the church, leaders, as they imbibe an anti-Israel, anti-Zionist spirit, will also imbibe an anti-Semitic spirit. I expect to see these things unfolding more and more and more in the coming year and years ahead. 866-34-TRUTH. If you have a Jewish-related question of any kind or want to differ with me on a Jewish-related issue, Thursdays, Thoroughly Jewish Thursdays, are the best days to call in on that. 866-348-7884. I want to tell you an interesting story, something that happened years back at a scholarly conference that ties in with some of the earlier comments I made about the radical religious right rising up. But before I do that, I'm holding something in my hand that actually I have tears in my eyes as I do. It's a Bible. You say you love the word that much? Well, this is a special Bible. Holy Bible, King James Version, from the American, published by the American Bible Society. It says reference edition. I don't know where I guess there are a couple little notes on the bottom, not much else. Dictionary in the back of words which have changed in meaning. It's the Bible I got when I was saved. It's the Bible I got when I was saved. And here in my handwriting of that day, a 16-year-old, saved on November 12th, 1971, then I put beneath that December 17th. November 12th is when I first believed and prayed and had that tremendous battle in my soul about surrendering and obeying the Lord. And December 17th was the day of surrender. And then other notes, received baptism in the Spirit, baptized in water February 4th, 1972, preached first sermon August 21st, 1973, Acts 26, 18. I taught first Bible study, November 20th, 1974, and I've got exclamations of praise in there just in my handwriting in these early years. I finished my first reading of this book, 2:46 a.m., Thursday, March 30th, 1972, which indicates that even then I was a late-night person. And then twice through, 1 a.m., August 30th, 72. So I was saved a year and a few months before I read through the Bible cover to cover the first time. And then the second time took 5 months. And then the third time, finished at 5:15 p.m., December 5th of 72. So what, that's about 3 months and 5 days. Then the fourth time, was it 4-something p.m., March 14th of 73. So again, what, 3 months and change. And then the fifth time through, 10:44 p.m., July 26, 73, so that was about 4 months and change. So I had read through the Bible cover to cover 5 times before I preached my first sermon after being saved a year and a half. And then, let's see, sixth time, 3:33 p.m., June 15th, 1974. My work schedule had changed. I was out of college, high school then, and started college, so I was reading the word at a slower pace at that time, but I found this. It wasn't that it was hidden, but I was going through some books in a library office here, another part of our building, and I found this stacked on top of some others, and just going through it again. And wow, how can you describe the discovery of the Word of God. How can you describe what Jeremiah talks about it in Jeremiah 15, 16? Your words were found and I did eat them, and your word became to me the joy and rejoicing of my heart, because I'm called by your name, O Lord of hosts. The discovery of the God of the Word, the wonder of reading the Scriptures and encountering God through them, and the extraordinary wisdom of God. And in those days when I was saved from about a year to a year and a half, I used to memorize 20 verses a day out of the King James. And so memorized in that time probably 4,000-something verses as I was reading the Bible cover to cover. Just amazing, wonderful, glorious. What a God. What a Savior. What a word He's given us. All right, back with your calls.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, I'm looking right now at my brand new blog that we just launched, Line of Fire blog. So it's one word, lineoffireblog.blogspot.com. We'll have links on our homepage shortly. But just to let you know, lineoffireblog.blogspot.com. And we've posted there a video from my India trip. I mentioned we'd have it up for you to watch. We've posted it. We've already gotten hundreds of folks watching it and many people touched by it. So that's on the blog. But I'm also looking at the latest hate mail that I got. And I don't understand this. I most of the time I know what somebody's mad at, what article they're responding to, what it is that got them upset. But this one, I don't understand. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. So when I write on Town Hall as a columnist there, someone can click and send a note that goes to their administrator, and then it gets sorted, and I'm sure just sorted electronically, and then sent directly to you. So people don't have my personal email address, but I get it sent to my personal email address. So here's the email. You want war with Iran? Send your own blanking kids, not mine. Yeah, he doesn't say blanking. You want war with Iran? Send your own blanking kids, not mine. Stop sucking up to Israel. What a piece of blank this town hall spews. One can clearly see you're for the Tea Party of hate. I know, because of your hate for Ron Paul. First thing, I've never mentioned Ron. I don't think I've ever mentioned Ron Paul in any of my articles. I don't remember mentioning Ron Paul, ever. Pro or con? Second, Tea Party. Fine, I've got no issue with the Tea Party, but when have I ever associated with the Tea Party? And notice, hate. He mentions hate twice, although it seems the email, he or she writing it, is full of hate. But stop. And when did I mention Iran? Of course, I got profound issues with Iran, but when... Anyway, I'm just trying to figure out what this person is responding to. Stop sucking up to Israel. That's when I read this today. It's like, oh, very interesting. Very interesting. I wonder what makes this person tick. I think for the new year, I'm going to write an article about Ron Paul and ask this question. And no, don't call me about Ron Paul today unless it has to do with Israel, okay? Why do his supporters take things so personally? I just don't see it with any other candidates. Anyway, at least on that level. 866-34-TRUTH to your calls. Sheila in Englewood, New Jersey, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah. Hello?
Go ahead, Sheila.
Yeah. In Psalm 68, verse 11, God said that he gave the word, and great is the multitude of them that publish it. Now, we're talking about Jerusalem, you said today. I wasn't really prepared, but I thought about a scripture in Luke 21:24, which said, and then I want you to comment on it. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and they shall be led away captive into all nations. I believe that fulfills. Second part, okay. And because it have a colon. And Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles. Mm-hmm. Until, I hope you understanding me?
Yeah, I'm understanding you. I'm looking at the verse.
Okay, because a week, I can't talk. The Gentiles, until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Now, in Daniel 9:27, I know
tell you what, do you have a question on this, Sheila?
I'm going to ask a question. Yeah. Now, do you think the time of the Gentiles will be fulfilled when Daniel 9:27 takes place? You know what it says?
Yes, I'm familiar with it. Okay, great question.
You want me to read it, Doctor?
No. I'm good with it. Daniel 9:27.
Okay, because I know you didn't have time to prepare on that.
No, that's fine. Thank you for wanting to be thorough and clear, Sheila. So let me respond. Uh-huh. There are some who feel that the times of the Gentiles came to an end when Jerusalem came back into Jewish hands in 1967 after the Six-Day War.
Right.
And Jerusalem no longer being trod underfoot by the Gentiles. That's possible. The only thing is that there's the larger times of the Gentiles, which is the harvest of Gentile souls around the world, and that continues an ever-increasing number. So could it be that there are two separate things, that the times of the Gentiles controlling Jerusalem has come to an end already, while God continues to move among the Gentiles and the rest of the world? Or is there going to come, is this yet a future event? Now, as for Daniel 9:27, some would take that as the destruction of the first temple in the year 70. Some would take it as a still future destruction. So, Sheila, I would say this. It's very clear that Jesus spoke accurately and prophetically.
You think it's passed already, Daniel 9:27?
I personally read Daniel 9:27 in terms of the destruction of the first temple, and that this is a messianic prophecy of the things that the Messiah would have to accomplish the second temple in the year 70. So I take it as being passed. I have other friends that say that last week, that 70th week that Daniel speaks of, is their future. I believe it was fulfilled with the death and resurrection of Jesus and the destruction of the first temple. As to the meaning of Luke 21:24, though, I think it is debatable. Has the time of the Gentiles come to a close? Has the time of the Gentiles come to a close with the Jerusalem coming back into Jewish hands? Or is there still a treading of foot by Gentiles in terms of some domination way or the fact that there's not Jewish access to the Temple Mount because of not wanting to have conflicts with the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque? So I don't see it as – I see it as transitioning out of the times of the Gentiles, but not fulfilled yet. But, Sheila, thanks for the question, and thanks for wanting to be prepared. I appreciate it. By the way, if any of you are wondering why she quoted Psalm 68:11, that wasn't in relationship to Jerusalem. That was just in relationship to the multitude that proclaims his word, male and female alike, it would be commonly used. Okay, we'll come back with more calls. I want to open up in more depth what I expect to see in the church, in the Jewish community. A reminder, if you're in the D.C. area, join me Thursday, January 5th, for a special message I'll be bringing from 12 to 1 at the Family Research Council. It should be a very, very important message and day. It's open to the public. Also, tomorrow, again, from 2 to 3, Dr. John Lennox will be on with me live here on the Line of Fire. And let me ask you again, as we have our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday focus, do you yet have a copy of Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, the most important book I've written in terms of the church and the Jewish people, the most eye-opening book, the most translated book I've ever written? We've seen pastors and leaders have a complete change of heart after reading it, their hearts being open, their burdens deepening. Get yourself a copy. It's just $15, postage paid. Get multiple copies. And thanks to all who have been sending an extra year-end gift, standing with us. We really appreciate it. Here's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. You've got some funds burning a hole in your pocket that you want to get rid of before the end of the year. Hey, sow them into our ministry, and we will put them to good use to reach the lost sheep of the house of Israel, stir the church for revival, and help bring the gospel to the nations. 1-800-278-9978. Jesus the Jew remains the most controversial, influential Jew of all time.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, let me tell you what happened to me at a conference I was at, oh, I guess 20-something years ago. It's an academic conference in Chicago, Society of Biblical Literature, American Academy of Religion, and I was delivering a scholarly paper there in an Old Testament Hebrew seminar. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire. Phones are open for your Jewish-related questions today or comments. So I delivered my paper. It was a technical paper on some of the words in Psalm 2 and how we could read them and understand them. And then, because I was at the conference for a few days, I stepped in on some other sessions. This is just a time when scholars get together, and you may have 10 people in a room, and you read a paper, and then people clap, and then they ask you questions or challenge points, and someone gets up and reads a paper, a half-hour, 45-minute paper, whatever. And it's just how the thing goes. That's what happens. And then you hang out with people outside of the sessions and interact. Well, I wandered in to one seminar. It was a Matthew seminar, and it was big. It must have had 70 people there, which is a lot. I mean, sometimes you have 5 people in a room, but this one had 70 people. At least in those days, it was a lot. And there was a discussion on what's the primary theme of Matthew. One scholar was saying it's the love command, which seemed very odd. And someone was, it's the conflict with the Pharisees. No, it's the issue of Torah and an authority issue. And anyway, because I'm not a New Testament scholar by academic training, although a student of the New Testament all these years, but because I'm not a New Testament scholar by academic training, I sat and listened as the discussion went on, and different New Testament scholars, many of them well-known, some of the top scholars in the world, raising their hands and giving their points and arguments back and forth. And finally, I thought, let me weigh in here. So I raised my hand, and I said that my scholarship is Old Testament, Jewish background, Semitics. That's my scholarship. So I'm coming from that perspective. I didn't mention I was a Jewish believer in Jesus. But I said, as I look at this, it seems that these three areas, the conflict over Torah, conflict over authority, conflict with the Pharisees, are all the same. They're all three facets of the same conflict, of the same issue here. And I proceeded to explain it. I broke it down. I explained why. And got some really good response. And the discussion went on quite a while, so many of the people are now raising their hands and going second, third time. So I finally raised my hand one again. And afterwards, one of the world's top Matthew scholars ran into me in the hotel lobby. And he said, man, you should have kept going. What you're saying was great. It was excellent. You should have kept talking. And I just smiled to myself. How did I know this? On what basis did I know? I'm a Jewish believer in Jesus. In other words, these were the types of things that we've run into. This is the type of interaction with the Jewish community and with the rabbis. I've been studying the scripture, but this was something that intuitively I understood because I've lived it out on some level. And I've expected for many, many years that the strongly religiously based Jewish population will grow and increase. I've expected it because of a high birth rate, 8, 10, 12, 14 kids in a family as opposed to 2 or 1 or none. And I've expected it just my reading of things is that a lot of what happened in New Testament days and a lot of the conflicts is almost going to be relived. I don't mean Jesus himself physically being here doing the same miracles, but God's people full of the Spirit in conflict with religious authorities, with martyrdom and the whole bit in Israel. I expect that. God forbid we ever try to provoke such a thing, but I'm simply saying I expect it. So as the religious right is growing in Israel, there's no surprise to me about this. There's no surprise. And as we see some of the radicalizing of it, yes, it may still be fringe, but it's growing in number. That doesn't surprise me. So I'll explain more of what I see coming and talk about what's happening in the news, as well as take your calls on the other side of the break.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
866-34-TRUTH. That is the number for your calls, 866-348-7884. Online, ask drbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. I mentioned earlier that I expect to see several trends continuing in the coming years among the Jewish people in the church. I expect to see an increase, a radical increase in number and influence and stringency and dogmatism in the religious right in America, but primarily in Israel. Primarily in Israel. I expect to see a Jewish fascination with a non-messianic Jesus. Of course, it's a step in the right direction, getting Jews open to and thinking about Jesus. I expect to see the church as a whole becoming more and more relaxed with, sympathetic to, understanding of Jewish roots, as opposed to looking at it like, why are you going backwards and what is this? At the same time, I see more and more fringe groups representing different Jewish roots, Hebrew roots, alleged movements. I see more and more fringe groups rising up, some of whom will actually be completely apostate from the gospel and will find themselves in some never-never land between Judaism and Christianity or Judaism and the Messianic Jewish faith. And I expect to see that while many young people fervently going after the Lord will catch a burden for Israel, that many others in the church, including young people, will become increasingly anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, and ultimately anti-Semitic, even among evangelicals. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I talk more about what's happening in Israel, let me go to the phones. Julius in Upper Marlboro, Massachusetts, thanks for calling.
No, that's Upper Marlboro, Maryland.
All right, hang on. All right. Okay. Can I just have a little chat with somebody? All right, Andrew. I know, Andrew, that you work really hard at this and you're sharp and you take this seriously. But didn't we have this a little while ago with Maryland is MD, not MA? And I'm trying to figure out where in the world is Upper Marlboro, Massachusetts? So I'm not sure. Maybe it's getting towards the end of the year. Not quite sure what's happening, but just want the whole listening world to know, in all humility, that was Andrew's fault and not mine, which means I'm about to mess up badly. Okay, thanks for being patient, Julius. Back to you in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. I knew Upper Marlboro, Maryland, because I lived in Maryland for 9 years, but back to you, sir.
All righty. That wasn't really that important. I just wanted to correct it.
You got to, man. You got to keep our guys on their toes. One day it's going to be very important, and we'll mess it up, and we'll offend a caller, and they'll fall away from the faith, and they'll, so we got to get this right. Go ahead.
Well, I am a born-again Christian, but I haven't been all my life. I'll tell you, one of the key things that happened to me is I was a seeker of God, and I went through everything that you could imagine, even into some of the mystical things. But he led me in the right direction. But the one thing that I couldn't deny was the you had a caller earlier saying which phase were we in?
Right.
I think this is the last. We're in the last days. It doesn't mean the last 10 days. Or, 10 years or 20, because a day is like 1,000 years in the presence of the Lord, and mm-hmm. and a 1,000 years like a day. Because
right.
In other words, time, as far as our Lord is concerned, it doesn't. It's a different thing. We're in this three-dimensional world, so time is important. And it's important anyway, but things happen. Our finite mind sometimes can't compute the enormity of infinity,
mm-hmm.
which our God is infinite. He controls infinity. He is infinite. So with all that out of the way, the 1967 war
mm-hmm.
is what actually eventually led me to salvation.
Seriously?
Yes, sir. I'm a military. I'm a warrior. I'm a David type, mighty
uh-huh.
man type. I don't think I would qualify in this group of mighty men because their feats were enormous. But
you're a military
man. I'd kind of be following along.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I look at things from a military point of view,
And, so was it the miracle of what happened in 67 or the
yes,
fact
it is.
That Israel
and
really
it's
wiped
the miracle
off the
that
map?
Continues to happen.
Yeah.
If I don't you have to be almost out of your mind to deny Jehovah. You have to be and Yeshua, because there's no way any other it can exist. Israel, the small land amount of land that they have, surrounded by enemies on every side, multitudes of enemies, and now they have money, they have a lot of power, they have modern weaponry, and they always had. They were being supplied by the Russians. They had the best stuff. They went against Israel.
Just on that note, it is kind of wild that we sell weaponry to Saudi Arabia and to Israel. You know,
yes, it is.
Obviously, there's the mercenary motivation or the Pentagon trying to figure out the balance of power or who's going to use what weapons against each other, but that it becomes very dangerous.
Let's put it this way. The truth is Israel does not attack other countries. They would be stupid. They follow a pattern of just retaliation. They haven't sought to... I don't know we've been talking about going back to the pre-67. That's not right, because if I was a part of the Israeli parliament, I would not
land
for peace.
Right. The fact of the matter is
the limits of where Israel should be.
Israel's given back, gave back all the Sinai, for example. It's given back
correct.
Other portions of land. There are other things that are indefensible. To leave Israel 9 miles wide is simply not gonna work. And there are certain in times of war. I mean, look, America's gained territory in times of war, and that's what happens. And as far as Israel, if someone said, well, they take a preemptive strike in 67, though they were surrounded by enemies ready to strike, and rather than waiting for the first bombs to drop, they moved, and then suddenly the entire Egyptian Air Force was taken out. But hey, Julius, listen, I got to run, but thanks for calling in as a military man and sharing that reality. I hope you heard what Julius is saying, that recognizing what happened in 67 and then what continues to happen. I mean, if you listen to the media a lot, it's like Israel's the Goliath, the terrible, mean Goliath. And no, Israel is a tiny nation. Yes, it has certain weaponry. It's a tiny nation surrounded by hostile enemies. And if not for the will of God, Israel will not survive. Hey, Julius, thank you, sir, for calling in. Okay, I absolutely stand with Israel. I absolutely support Israel today. I do not agree with all Israel's policies. I do not agree with every decision the nation makes. I fully understand the amount of division and secularism at times and carnality and Knesset itself. I certainly recognize that the bulk of the nation is secular and worldly. That you want to see a worldly city? You want to see a worldly city that needs the Lord? You want to see a worldly city with sensuality and pornography and drugs and materialism? You want to see a worldly city that works especially with the gay community to set up travel and tour and Eve. Go to Tel Aviv. You want to find the stiffest resistance to the gospel you'll ever find, go to an ultra-Orthodox part of Israel. I am not idealizing Israel. I am not idealizing the modern state. Oh, Israel. Oh, these are my own people. You know, there's the joke, the little poem, oh, to live with the Jews in heaven, that would be glory. To live with them here on earth, that's another story. I'm not idealizing. The Jews. We have our problems like everybody else. And we've got some problems more extreme than other people, and other people have more problems more extreme than us. But if you think we go to Israel, say, the people there, they just all love the Lord. No, that's not the reality. That's not the reality. I support Israel because of God's purposes for Israel. I support Israel because of the history of anti-Semitism in the church, the professing church. I support Israel for matters of justice as well in the Middle East. That's why I stand with Israel. But it's not in some idealized way, nor was I, I don't, I'm not sitting in the heels of Julius's call, because I don't think he's looking at it in an idealized way either. I'm talking about the some of the issues in Israel. And if you haven't followed the news, this has gotten world attention now. And, of course, many in the Jewish community know this looks very bad, Jews attacking Jews. As one rabbi in Brooklyn said, you know, Jews attacking Jews, what are the Gentiles going to say? But in Beit Shemesh, a town of, what, about 80,000 people, many of whom are religious Jews, but an increasing minority are ultra-religious, ultra-Orthodox, and they want deeper gender segregation, men on one side of the road, women on the other. They would, of course, insist that women would sit in the back of a bus to be separated from the men. And they would want them to be covered and clothed in such a way that 7-year-old religious girl who's not dressed modestly enough gets spat on. Expect more. Expect more.
God of light, hear our cry.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We're trying to sort out why Andrew a couple of times has confused Maryland, abbreviating it MA, the Maryland MD. And his theory is it's because Maryland starts with MA. I think maybe it's like an inner healing, some conflict he had when he was a child, something traumatic with Maryland versus, no, I'm just messing with you. 866-34-TRUTH. When you do call in, though, Andrew's our call screener today, Dwight tomorrow. Wish him a happy new year. Oh, and since you don't get to talk to Joey, our faithful engineer, toiling by the hour. Do you know that Joey actually sleeps in the studio? He's married with little kids, but you know that Joey only goes home once a week. He's so devoted to me in this broadcast and to the ministry that he sleeps in the studio by his engineering desk. Just he is absolutely that devoted, and he is threatening to cut off my feed right now. Or is he blushing? Is he blushing? Not sure what to make of this. Okay. Just have a little fun with the boys as we come to the end of the year. But my appreciation to everybody who works so hard every day to make this program a blessing to so many. 866-34-TRUTH. I talked about my expectation that there's going to be an increasing fascination with Jesus the Jew among Jewish people. Just as there was in the late 60s, early 70s with the hippie movement, that Jesus was okay with the hippies. They liked Jesus. They didn't like religion, but they liked Jesus. And then God, of course, began to save us by the multitudes, late 60s, early 70s. And Jewish people were at the forefront of those coming to faith at that time. Well, I just sense and see it coming, more and more Jews interested in Jesus, recognizing, yeah, he's one of us, or this ancient historical figure, this rabbi or this mystic, but not as Messiah. Or as a downgraded Messiah, but to me that's positive. That's a step in the right direction. Someone sent me a link, Kabbalah Students Speak. I have no idea who this group is, didn't research at all, just glanced at it and found some rather curious posts, some interesting ones, but some rather curious posts. And one from October 3rd, Jesus and Kabbalah, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Yosef, Jesus the son of Joseph, was the Messiah ben Joseph sent to bring the energy and light of the Torah to the entire pagan and Gentile world. He taught Kabbalah to his closest students, but to the general masses, he spoke only in metaphor to keep it simple. He embraced the bandits, thieves, and sinners, as did all Kabbalists in history, so mystical Jews, like Rabbi Akiva, who was skinned alive and slaughtered for teaching Kabbalah to the Israelites. Jesus was executed for attempting to bring the Kabbalistic mysteries of Torah to the rest of the world. This would have brought about the redemption of the world had he succeeded. Well, of course, this mixes a tiny, tiny, tiny kernel of truth with a whole boatload of error. Kernel of truth being that Jesus, as Messiah, brings the knowledge of the God of Israel and the truth of the God of Israel to the ends of the earth, but not as a teacher of Jewish mysticism, and not as one who was killed for teaching Jewish mysticism. Now here's the quandary. Here's the quandary. If Jesus had come as an respected rabbi and teacher, as a man, right? I'm talking about just if he was a great man, and he had come and said to his contemporary Jews, "We are called to be a light to the nations. Someone must go. I will lay down my life as an example of love and sacrifice, and I will make the name of God known to the Gentiles so that they can come to worship the God of Israel, and they will take on the moral commandments and standards of the Lord without themselves becoming Jews." Well, many Jews would have no problem with that. In fact, they could embrace that. But the problem is that it's not what he said, and it's not an option that we have, as attractive as it may be to some, because he came as the Messiah of Israel. Every strand of the New Testament, those critical scholars that tried to dissect it and take it apart, well, this was historical, this is mythological, well, this is added, this is changed. Of course, I don't agree with their approach and their methodology in many ways because of its skeptical, critical approach. But, and to me, in many ways, it's not academic. But, with all respect to whatever scholarship they're doing, no matter what strands you unpack and untie, it has the same core, that he came as the Messiah of Israel. He came to his own Jewish people. So we have two choices and two choices only. Either he is the Messiah of Israel, and by means of being the Messiah of Israel, the Savior of the world, or he's an imposter or a deceiver or has been misrepresented, whatever. He cannot be the Savior of the Gentile world if he is not the Messiah of Israel. When I've debated rabbis and they say, we have no problem with you believing in your Jesus. We have no problem with Christians believing and Gentiles following, but he's not for the Jews. We think the New Testament's wonderful. We think that Christianity's a beautiful religion, but it's not for the Jews. I said, well, then the whole thing's a lie. How can you say it's a beautiful book when you're saying it's full of lies and distortions? How can you say it's a beautiful book when it completely misrepresents what the Hebrew Scriptures say? How can you say it's a beautiful book when it proclaims the resurrection of someone who didn't rise? So you can't have it both ways. Either he is the Messiah of Israel and therefore the Savior of the world, or he's neither. Whether he's being misrepresented, whether he himself was deceived or deceiver, it's one or the other. Both cannot work, which means to all of my friends, all of my Gentile Christian friends listening right now, and that's not derogatory, just of the nations, right? Please share this good news about Jesus the Messiah with your Jewish friends and relatives and co-workers. Please share this good news about Jesus the Messiah. As you build relationships, as you pray for people, don't withhold the water of life. I was saved through the witness of Gentile Christian friends. Most American Jews will be. Don't withhold the message of salvation. Don't think, well, this is for the Gentile world, not for the Jews. No. To the contrary, to the Jew first, also to the Gentile. That'll be underscored as you read my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. Perhaps the best $15 investment you'll make in your life. $15 postage paid, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. You'll find it to be one of the most eye-opening, shocking, life-changing books you've ever read about the Jewish people, about the church. As one of my dear colleagues years ago said, it was too true to be good. He said, I wanted to put it down, but I couldn't. It'll open your eyes. It'll change your life. Get multiple copies for your friends. 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978 to order. You can do it on our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the line of fire. One more time, 1-800-278-9978 to order. Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, to become a monthly torchbearer, to stand with us, to hold our hands up as we reach the Jewish people with the good news of Jesus. My bottom line today, the Jewish people will not be able to get away from Jesus the Jew, Jesus the Rabbi, Jesus the most influential Jew who ever lived, the one who has brought the knowledge of God to hundreds of millions of people around the world, the one who ultimately will restore his Jewish people to the one true God. The Jewish people, are they drawing closer and closer to Jesus or getting further away? And what about the church Is it embracing its Jewish roots? Is it rejecting Israel? We'll sort it out today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So who is it? Who is the most influential Jew who ever lived? Who is it is the most influential rabbi who ever lived? Who is it who has brought the knowledge of the God of Israel to more human beings than anyone who ever lived? Well, the answer is obvious. Jesus. Jesus the Jew. It is so fascinating. So fascinating. As I've interviewed other Jewish believers on this broadcast here, in particular on Thursdays, on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday here on the Line of Fire, it is so interesting to hear that so many of my friends growing up, fellow Jewish believers today, and this includes me, growing up, we didn't know that Jesus was Jewish. I found out he was Jewish, and I can't even remember how, when I was somewhere around 12 years old. Other friends didn't find out till they were in their 20s or older. Some are still shocked to hear it. I believe that continues to change. I believe, little by little, more and more Jewish people are recognizing Jesus as a Jew, and it is preparing the way for more and more of them to receive him. I want to talk about things that are happening in the Jewish community worldwide, things that we can expect to be happening in the Jewish community here in America, and things that are happening in the church as it pertains to Israel. Also, being Thursday, that means this is the best day for you to call if you've got a Jewish-related question for me, if you have a Jewish issue you want to bring up, if you've got a question about Jewish traditions or practices or Jewish teaching or interpretation of Messianic prophecy or how to respond to rabbis. This is the best day to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. I want to say plainly that Jewishness doesn't save, Jesus saves. Understanding in depth that he's a rabbi, understanding the Jewish background of his teaching, understanding his Jewishness, Yeshua's Jewishness, it's wonderful, but that does not save. That is background to the good news. That is background to the gospel. The gospel message is Messiah crucified and risen again. The gospel message is about the atoning death of Jesus and his resurrection and salvation through him, salvation from sin, forgiveness, beginning a brand new life, coming into the kingdom of God. Understanding his Jewishness is important, but look, let's look at it like this. Let's say some culture, some group of people, trickled down to them that Jesus was a woman, not a man. All right? All they knew is there's this famous leader from the first century who died a violent death. That's all they know about. Had some interesting teaching. And they thought this figure was a woman. We said, no. And I've never heard anyone, well, I'm sure people have all kinds of weird things about, you know, transcendent spirit or, you know, whatever. But you know what I'm saying. I don't know anyone that thinks Jesus was a woman. But let's say you meet this group. And say, no, he wasn't a woman, he's a man. Oh, he's a man. Yeah, he's a man. Jesus, Yeshua, it's a man's name, it's a man. And everybody knows he's a man. Okay. Well, it doesn't save him. In other words, knowing he was a man versus woman does not save anyone. That's not the heart of the gospel. The same way, understanding his Jewishness doesn't save anyone. Everybody in the first century knew he was Jew. When whatever debates there were with the apostles preaching to their fellow Jews, they all knew he was a Jew. That was not the argument. Believe he's a Jew. No. What did he do? What did he preach? What do we preach about him? That's what saves. And yet, the Jewish community, I expect, more and more is going to be embracing him as one of their own. And that will be a bridge, a path to salvation.
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Last night, I spent an hour, again, as I know it's about 40, 45 minutes, Wednesday nights, talking to an ultra-Orthodox rabbi, counter-missionary. We often post one against the other online. He has written several hundred pages attempting to rebut my five volumes on answering Jewish objections to Jesus. We've interacted face-to-face a number of times, but and exchanged several hundred pages of emails, but I had to cut way back on that. He's very busy as well. But we talk by phone. We talk by phone on a regular basis. We love each other dearly. We respect each other deeply. I don't question for a moment the sincerity of his life, and to the core of his being, he wants to please God. I believe that. Let me clarify. All of us, to the core of our being outside the Lord, are lost and in sin. I understand that. But to the core of his conscious being, he wants to please God and do the right thing. And Paul spoke of Jewish people in his day saying they had a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. So my friend, Rabbi Blumenthal, would be one of those that I would put as absolutely on that list for sure. Zealous, deeply devoted to wanting to do the will of God, and yet I would say so near and yet so far. And I'm sure he'd have similar assessments of me. But my constant interaction, friends, with the Jewish community, my close friendship with Rabbi Shmuley, with whom I've debated many times, and we're hoping to do a number of debates this coming year. In fact, if you are involved in a sizable church, a substantial church that could host a debate between Rabbi Shmuley and me in his new book, Kosher Jesus, when it comes out, he's asked if we can coordinate some things. I would love to speak with you or have someone in my office speak with you about what it would take to make that happen. And he's glad to do it in church. Of course, I want to get to more of a Jewish audience, but perhaps you can invite Jewish friends. But contact us through the website, askdrbrown.org, and let us know that you think you might be able to host something like that. But all of these close relationships mean that I have a certain brokenness in my heart for the salvation of my people, that I carry a certain pain. Paul wrote of something which is beyond my daily experience, massively beyond it, but I've experienced it at times. He spoke of the grief and agony that he carried for the lost sheep of the house of Israel on a regular basis in Romans, the 9th chapter, that he was in continual pain because his own people as a nation did not receive the Messiah, did not believe in Jesus as Messiah, whereas the message was increasingly going to the Gentile world. And at that stage, it was in the early days of going to the Gentile world, and there were multiplied tens of thousands, several hundred thousand Jews who were followers of Jesus, and yet there was a national leadership rejection. And it's quite, from what we can tell within Paul's lifetime, there would have been several hundred thousand Jews following Jesus, but the Gentile numbers were increasing. And obviously Paul sensed and understood in his spirit what was going to happen, that this message of Jesus would become increasingly something that was thought of as a Gentile message. Just like if you go to India, many of the people in India think that the message of Jesus is some Western message, some white man's religion, not recognizing the Middle Eastern origins of the faith, or thinking it's just a poor man's religion because it was mainly the very poor in India that had embraced the message through the years. Well, there's this misperception that the message of Jesus is a Gentile message, is a foreign message, is a message about another God, another religion, another faith, another Savior. And it is crucially important in the days to come that Jewish people understand Jesus is one of us, one of our own, one of our boys made it, as the joke goes. Have I told you that joke? Maybe I will in a minute. Maybe I will. Stay tuned for a Jewish joke. I tell you a lot of Jewish jokes over the air, but it's better to do it face to face. And then I can't hear the audience laughing and that kind of thing, and recognize if the joke really hit home. But I am expecting in the coming years, this coming year, 2012, I'm expecting it, the ever-increasing awareness of the Jewishness of Jesus. And I just went through this whole spiel, to give you another Jewish word, German-Jewish word, Yiddish. I just went through this spiel to say that it's not spiel, it's spiel, all right? You can say that. It's not hard to say. I just went through this whole spiel to say that Jewishness doesn't save you, and discovering that Jesus is a Jew doesn't save you. We understand that. We understand that. The issue is recognizing him as the Jewish Messiah, recognizing him as a Jew, because that's who he is, that grounds his message, that makes him relevant to our people, and then explaining what the message is, what the good news is, what the Messiah has come and done, and the wonder of it, that it is for Jew and Gentile alike, and that Jew and Gentile become one body, one family, one people in the Messiah. Not one higher and the other lower, but one body, one people, all together in him. Wow. Wonderful. Amazing. I'm expecting that more and more Jews will be recognizing Jesus as one of their own. But that does not mean they will be saved. So I expect you'll see more news stories and reports and documentaries and this discovery and that and Jesus the Jew and the rabbi becoming it from every angle and still missing his uniqueness and in particular his messianic mission. Don't be grieved over it. Say, okay, step in the right direction. Step in the right direction. Just like the blurb I wrote for Rabbi Shmuley's Kosher Jesus, he asked me to write an endorsement for it. And I basically said, while disagreeing with something on just about every page, in particular this, this, and this, I'm thrilled to see an Orthodox rabbi embracing Jesus the Jew as a rabbi, as a Jew. And it's may this be the first in a first major step in the Jewish reclamation of Jesus the Messiah. Okay, so we'll try this joke, all right? We're going to try this joke. And if you've got a don't call in with a Jewish joke. Don't call in with a Jewish joke. Maybe we'll do a whole joke day, like 30 years, but don't call in with a Jewish joke. If you have a Jewish-related question or an issue you want to take up with me or something you want to differ with, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. All right, Harvard University, graduation, two proud fathers sitting next to each other as their sons get their diplomas, Jewish father and a Catholic father. The Jewish father says to the Catholic father, so what's your son going to do after graduation? Catholic father says, oh, he is very, very religious. He is very devoted. He's actually going to seminary, and he wants to become a priest. And the Jewish father says, seminary? Priest? That's it? The Jewish father says, I don't know. He could be a fine priest. I don't know. Maybe one day he'll become a bishop. The Jewish dad says, a bishop? That's it? The Catholic father, he's taken aback. And I don't know. I mean, maybe one day I'll be a cardinal. And the Jewish father says to him, a cardinal? That's it? And the Catholic dad, at this point, he's flabbergasted. He said, I don't know. Maybe one day my son, maybe it'll be the Pope. And the Jewish dad says, the Pope? That's it? And the Catholic guy, at this point, he's just had it. He says, what do you want him to be, God? And the Jewish guy says, one of our boys made it. Okay, anyway, just Andrew Joey, get that, guys. Hope so. I can't ask Randy today. He's not here, but I think he's heard it. I think he gets it and likes it. 866-34-TRUTH. So, again, one of the trends I expect to see, an ever-increasing interest in Jesus the Jew, just about every angle aside from his divine nature and every angle aside from his messiahship. But I expect this to increase. Let me say again, don't get grieved over it. If you hear Rabbi Shmuley in his Kosher Jesus book, and I'm sure I'll have him on the radio and we'll debate the thesis of his book on the air, much of it I agree with, much of it I passionately disagree with. Step in the right direction. Step in the right direction. Keep your eyes open for this, and perhaps this can be a bridge. This can be a way for you to cross that divide and tell your Jewish friend, yeah, Jesus is Jewish. And do you understand, though, what he said about himself? Do you understand that he claimed to be the Messiah? Look, I appreciate Christian Zionist groups that stand with Israel and say, we support you politically, we support you socially, we support you economically, but we will not share the gospel with you because we're not here to do that. I appreciate their solidarity with Israel, but the ultimate thing that the people of Israel need is the gospel of Jesus. The ultimate thing the people of Israel need is to understand Jesus is their Messiah, and because he's their Messiah, he is the Savior of the world. Come on. From the beginning of the end, the beginning to the end of the Gospels, Jesus is, from first to last, portrayed as, recognized as, presented as the Messiah of Israel, the Jewish Messiah, the one who came to fulfill what was written in Moses and the prophets, not start a new home and garden religion called Christianity. The fact that Christianity exists is just growing out of Jewish roots and in some ways growing away from Jewish roots. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, we have launched a blog, the purpose being that you go to one place, find out about the latest article I wrote, read some inspiring quotes we put together, look at some link that I find fascinating, watch us interact with others who differ. One place to go to that'll bring together what's happening on radio, what's happening as I travel and speak, what's happening in the world in which I live and serve and minister. We'll be having links to it on our homepage later today. But if you want to go there now, just go over to Line of Fire blog. So it's two Fs, Line of Fire, lineoffireblog.blogspot.com. lineoffireblog.blogspot.com. There are four posts up there now. There's my video from the India trip, which hundreds have watched already today and many deeply blessed and inspired by. There's a journal entry from India, 1994. I just posted this. I was testing the site the other day, and I posted it. So it's actually the first entry. I wrote this down while ministering in Panur, India, on February 15th, 1994. Quote, by warning, this is in my journal entry, by warning prospective converts about the potential hardships involved in following Jesus, we clearly increase the value of salvation. Just think of something so valuable that it is well worth purchasing at the cost of everything you own. Of course, this will also deepen the commitment of the new believer who, by very definition, will be serious about following the Lord. This should be something almost universally incorporated into my, quote, altar calls everywhere, especially where the potential cross is not self-evident. In other words, in settings where it seems like it's easy to follow Jesus, there's not much resistance, hey, just pray this prayer, get in, whatever. It's important to challenge people to really follow him, to really count the cost, to really be a disciple, to really live for God, to really understand what it means to die to sin and be alive to God. And you think when you get married, you make a lifelong commitment to your spouse. And you know that it is a mutual shared life from then on. And there might be challenges. You might have to walk through hardship together, but you do it joyfully. Should our embracing of the Lord and following of the Lord be any less than the commitment made by a husband to a wife or a wife to a husband on their marriage day? Anyway, those last comments are not my journal entry, but the first part, journal entry is up there. The video from the India trip, got to watch it. You want to see how many pastors and leaders raise their hand when I ask how many of them have been beaten or physically attacked or seriously threatened for the gospel. You want to see how these orphans live just sleeping on the ground there. You want to see the fervent prayer as these people respond and cry out to God. And I've got my latest fun hate mail I just posted there. So lineoffireblog.blogspot.com. Visit over there. Okay, I've been talking the first half hour about Jewishness of the faith, about Jewishness of Jesus, about Jews recovering this, capturing this more and more. I expect to see this more and more in the coming days. At the same time, I see many believers in the church recognizing the Jewish roots of the faith more and more. it's becoming more and more understandable and acceptable to celebrate the feasts and the holy days. It's becoming more and more understood and acceptable to talk about Jesus the Jew. Some of the things that I heard when I was first saved, say within the first 10 or 15 years of being saved, seemed so far. What? Jews? Not in the church? Messianic congregation? What? Seems so foreign to me. Now it's just common all over America, and people understand. So you go to Israel, you're going to find Messianic congregations meeting Friday night, Saturday morning, as opposed to Sunday. You're going to find that all over. It's like, oh, yeah, I understand that. I don't have a problem with that. I see the diversity in the body. I see that. I understand that. So I believe that's going to be increasing. That's a good thing. The church embracing more and more Jewish roots of the faith, and not for Gentiles to become Jews, but on the flip side, not for Jews to become Gentiles. Yes, one new man in the Messiah, but living out this identity with diversity of expression and with recognition of the fact that this, the branches, the Gentile branches, were grafted into an Israel Jewish tree that goes back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That being said, be on your guard. Be ever on the watch for fringe groups that will be rising. Of course, with the advent of the internet years back, this makes fringe groups have much more influence proportionately than they would have otherwise. Just be on your guard. More and more fringe groups telling Gentiles in particular that they are obligated to keep all of Torah that they can. Telling Gentiles in particular that they are obligated to live as Jews. Telling Gentiles and Jews alike that you must use certain names. If you don't use these names, and most of them don't even say Yeshua. I'm talking about the fringe groups. It's, you know, Yahshua, Yahushua, whatever. These fantasy names that never even existed. Yahshua is a name that never existed from everything we understand. It certainly was not Yeshua's name. As far as I can see, the name has never existed as a Hebrew name. Anyway, you're going to have these sacred name groups rising up. You're going to have it. You're going to have these fringe groups that deny the deity of the Messiah more and more and more. They'll say, well, the truth is being restored. This is what the first Jewish believers believe. Well, certainly not, because what we read in the New Testament is absolutely not that. But, so these things are coming. These things are coming. Now, I don't claim I've got the truth. If you listen to this radio broadcast, then everything we say is perfectly right. If we believe it, it's true. And if we don't believe it, it's false. I'm not claiming to be God's answer man on every last point. But I am saying that there are things that are clear and definite. And that's what I'm dogmatic about. And that's what I warn about. And then there are plenty of other areas we can have our differences in the same body, in the same family. So when I sound an alarm, it's not because within the body, within our same family, we have some differences. It's because of pronounced and serious error that ultimately leads us away from Jesus, Yeshua. Many of us get caught up with soulish things. What I mean is the things that appeal to, well, it would be like watching some movie and the musical soundtrack and everyone's crying. Whereas it's just not even true. It's just a movie. And someone comes in and turns the sound off. It's like, what's the matter? And the spell is broken. Why are you all crying? It's like, oh, spell is broken. A lot of us get into that spell with, oh, saying the words or wearing the garments or doing the certain, oh, and it's got nothing to do with spirituality sometimes. Sometimes it's just a soulish appeal. So be on your guard. As the church rightly more and more recognizes Jewish heritage, Jewish roots, Jewishness of the Messiah, at the same time, don't be surprised by seeing more and more fringe groups arise. And if you have questions, you don't have to mention names. You can talk about what they teach. Glad to address it right here on the Line of Fire. By God's grace, a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church often in compromise and often in confusion. Back with some very interesting news about Israel. Stay with us. Change the world.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on the Line of Fire. It's Thursday, our thoroughly Jewish Thursday, talking through some issues having to do with Israel, the Jewish people. What, as we did some year-end reflection yesterday, I've been doing some year-end reflection today, some trends, some positive things, some warnings. I want to keep that up. But as always, your calls are welcome. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I should say they are welcomed. Correct? Welcomed. 866-34-TRUTH. Any Jewish-related question you have, great. Today's a great day. Last week was just a blast. One of those unusual weeks where caller after caller called in with some different angle, disagreeing with me, attacking some position, including Orthodox Jewish woman who wanted to debate about Jesus, which is wonderful. It's one reason that we are on the air. But feel free to differ with me. Come on. Why have this passionate discussion with somebody over lunch or in your house or in your some church fellowship as to how wrong I am about, but you won't even call me to talk about it. If you're so right and I'm so wrong, enlighten our listeners. 866-348-7884, online askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire. Okay, I have just launched a blog where it's just a one place to go if I've got some inspiring thoughts, some neat quote. There it is. We just put out some article, and okay, here's the link to it. There's some controversy going on. We're involved with it. Want to share it with you, or something happening while we're in ministry. Boom. There it is. And if you subscribe to it, you'll find out when the posts come up. Otherwise, you can check daily for the latest things and weigh in as well. So we've got my video up from the India trip. We've got it on the blog. And I invite you to visit there. We'll have a link on our homepage later today. But right now, just go to lineoffireblog.blogspot.com. That's a little bit long, but not that long. Line of Fire, as in the name of the show. lineoffireblog.blogspot.com. And remember, friends, Denver, coming so soon. January 7th, we've got a whole day at Pastor Gino's. And can't wait to be with everyone. We're having a leaders luncheon, but please call to confirm you're coming, 303-933-8733. We're getting good response from folks that are going to be coming, 303-933-8733. Leadership luncheon, then open to the public, a seminar from 2 to 4 in the afternoon, urgent need for eye-opening why we must have a Jesus revolution and some practical steps. If you don't know why, it'd be an eye-opening afternoon. And then at night, 6 o'clock, the evening service, I'll be speaking about Israel, God's unfinished business with Israel. But particular pastors, leaders, please call and confirm you'll be coming to the luncheon, 303-933-8733. And then teaching the whole week, Denver Theological Seminary, broadcasting live from Denver, God willing, and then teaching, oh, 6-something hours every night at Denver Theological Seminary, then preaching at Yeshuat Sion in Denver, Messianic congregation led by a dear friend, Chaim Erbach. That'll be that Saturday, January 14th, before flying home. So looking forward to meeting many of you. If you listen on the broadcast, please come out on either of the Saturdays and introduce yourself. Tell me that you listen. That'll be a joy. And if you're in the Charlotte area, tomorrow night at Southern Evangelical Seminary, Dr. John Lennox, he is a mathematician. He is a brilliant scholar from Oxford University, committed Christian who debates the atheists. He's actually going to be on with me the first hour, so you're not going to hear it live, but I'll tell you about the interview tomorrow, and then you'll be able to catch it online. But if you're in the Charlotte area, please, tomorrow night, don't miss, as Dr. Lennox talks about, Genesis 1. Wow. All right. Have you seen the news from Israel about the riots, about the protests, thousands of Jews speaking up and saying they are against the ultra-Orthodox or the radical fringe ultra-Orthodox groups who are calling for strict gender segregation, wanting women to ride in the back of the buses in certain cities, be on the other side of the road so they don't pass each other. And even little girls who aren't dressed modestly enough get spat on. This is a coming trend. What does it mean to us here in America? Stay with me.
Flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just got an email from a friend asking me how I wrote a lengthy email during a live radio broadcast. Well, I get breaks, like a minute break, 2 minute break. You don't think we just stay unbusy here during it? And it's always relevant related stuff. In fact, I was writing to someone about Israel today. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Okay, let me repeat some of what I've laid out in the first hour and a half of broadcasting today. I expect in the Jewish community to see an increasing interest in Jesus as a Jew, not in the very religious community, although little by little God continues to work and bring ultra-Orthodox Jews to himself or around the world, but in smaller numbers. But I expect to see in the larger Jewish community, which is primarily not religious, an increasing interest in Jesus the Jew, an increasing recognition of him being one of us, one of our own. At the same time, without recognizing him as Messiah and having various heretical, non-biblical views about him, but it's a bridge. It's a step in the right direction. I'm expecting an increasing rise, ever-increasing rise, for years to come now, of the radical religious right in America, but primarily in Israel. It won't be welcomed in America, so you'll have it in small enclaves, but it will become more and more dominant in Israel. I've expected this for many years. You have to realize, after World War II, the religious Jewish community was terribly decimated, especially the Hasidic Jewish community. And it just absolutely tiny from what it had been. Many of the Jews killed in the Holocaust were secular, but many others were religious. And it looked as if this movement that had been so vibrant before the war was dead forever. So it has really come out of the ashes and gotten the attention of so many even secular Jews who have become religious. Now, again, it's still a small percentage of the Jewish population worldwide, but it grows rapidly. One obvious reason being the very high birth rate. If the average ultra-Orthodox couple is having 8, 10, 12 kids, whatever the numbers are, they're very high. And the average secular Jewish couple is having less than 2 kids. That means that over the course of a generation or two, you see a massive population shift. Now, that's what's happening in Israel. The secular Israelis have a very low birth rate, just like much of Europe and countries like Russia and Japan. And without immigration in America, it'd be similar here. There are certain folks of faith that have large families here in America, but America has taken on the tendencies of many others and people waiting longer to get married than having less kids or no kids once they do get married. So just the numbers game, you're going to have great, great, great increase in the religious Jewish population in Israel. And because it is in reaction against the secular community, because it's reaction against the worldliness of the larger community. Bear in mind, an Israeli girl serves in the army, as every male or female has to serve in the army for 2 or 3 years. Some of the ultra-Orthodox are exempt from that. That's a whole other issue, and then that brings certain hatred towards them from the rest of the Jewish community. But every Jewish young woman that serves in the Israeli army is allowed 2 government-paid abortions. You're not talking about this perfectly holy people. So because of the secular nature of much of the nation, the religious Jews become more and more religious. And there's a polarizing. There is a reaction against the worldliness of the culture, which I understand. And there is a desire to put up walls to keep that worldliness out from the religious community. And because of their aggressiveness and their devotion and their passion, even if they make up 10 or 15% of a city or population, they can become a dominant force. And in the overall political game in Israel, it's not a game, but whatever the right word to say, you don't just have 2 parties or you vote for this one to be president. You have multiple parties. So you have to form an alliance. Just picture Congress here in America, all right? We've got 100 people in the Senate, and then we have our total number, roughly 5 times that, in the House. Let's just use the Senate to be easy, 100 people. Well, what does it take to have a majority? Well, you have 51 Republicans, 49 Democrats, and reverse. Now you have a majority. and then supermajority, whatever those numbers are. So if you have 60 versus 40, well, Israel has that many numbers. So let's just picture that you have 10 different parties in America. You have a radical Islamic party. You have a radical fundamentalist Christian party. You have a radical Jewish party. You have a radical atheist party. Then you have your more mainstream parties. You got the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. Well, let's say you've got to get whoever gets to 51 rules, they bring in the government, okay? So what you have to do now is maybe your party gets 30 votes. You've got to form a coalition with maybe five or six other parties to get those other 21 seats. So now you've got your 51. You're following me? So what happens now is you may get this fringe group that just has two or three seats, but they say, well, you need me. What are you going to do for me? What are you going to do to get my vote? Well, we can give you this. Okay, fine, I'm in. That's what happens in Israel. So that some of the religious groups, even though they may not represent as many people, have disproportionate power because of the coalition government and because of the way you have to work out a deal. So there are some of the ultra-Orthodox groups, very religious groups, they want to have, for example, the oversight of the Ministry of Interior. That's to do with immigration. That's why sometimes Messianic Jews trying to enter the land have a harder time because of issues just like this. We are going to see an ever-increasing number of ultra-Orthodox Jews in Israel. Everybody knows this, basically. I mean, it's obvious. And it could soon be 20, 25% of the population. And with it, I expect it to get continually radicalized. I do not expect it to blend in more in the middle or go left-wing Orthodox and not so radical. I expect it to get more and more radicalized and try to enforce its ways more and more and ultimately have a massive conflict with Jewish believers. Now, just so you understand, if you go as a Christian, no Jewish identification whatsoever, you go as a Christian on tour in Israel, and you walk around the city and you find some Israelis who can speak English, you can talk to them about Jesus. You can hand them a tract. And if they were under 16 years old, then you have an issue with proselytizing minors. But otherwise, you share the gospel. No one's going to stop you. You can walk down the street with a Jesus shirt. Now, if you went into an ultra-Orthodox Jewish area, that wouldn't be the case. But just a general Israeli society, which is the bulk of the society, sure, go ahead. It's not a problem. There are Messianic Jewish friends we have who preach on street corners. There are Messianic Jewish friends we have who do outreach concerts, who are very vocal, open about their faith. There have been TV reports, some of them actually favorable recently. Newspaper articles, most were hit pieces against Messianic Jews, but some have come out favorable recently. Some amazing ones in the last couple of years, actually, about Jesus, this is a superstar followed by all these Jews in Israel. So I don't want you to get the wrong picture of things. And yet there are Messianic Jewish believers who live among very religious Jews, and they get harassed. There has been some physical persecution. At times there's been bombings of buildings, and there's the harassment of day and night having a group in front of your house with loudspeakers telling you to get out of town and trying to disrupt and things like that. That is going to increase. And the day will come. I fully expect this based on what's written in Scripture. I fully expect this based on my own experience and what seems obvious in terms of spiritual and sociological development. Mark my words. Things that we see in the New Testament, conflicts with the religious Jewish authorities and Jewish believers, things we read in the Gospels, things we read in Acts, we'll live them out in front of our eyes, especially in Israel. I say scripturally, I expect it because my view, say, of a passage like Matthew 24, is it has application to Jesus' day and that generation after him before the destruction of the first temple. And it has application, I fully believe it has application to a final destruction of a temple and final persecution of Jewish believers in the land. I expect that some of the things that, you read in the Gospels, you just kind of pick up where it left off, the Gospels and Acts. And here it will be unfolding again with Jewish believers in the land preaching the name of Yeshua in power and being persecuted for the faith. So the story that's gotten a lot of attention, this a lot of media sympathy in Israel, has caused quite an outrage. Prime Minister Netanyahu has addressed the issue and said there will be equality For men and women here in Israel, public space will be absolutely safe for women as well as for men. They will be respected. But here's a little girl, 7 years old, interviewed. She's from an Orthodox family. She's just there with her mom, so I don't know where the father is in the story. But they're Orthodox, but they're not ultra-Orthodox. So when she has to walk to go to school, she gets spat on and yelled at because she's not dressed the way they want her to be dressed, even though she's dressed modestly. This has caused an outcry to rise in the nation, and there are many religious Jews, ultra-Orthodox Jews, who are against this, who are outraged over it, but expect it to increase. Expect to see much of the New Testament lived out again in the flesh in Israel in the coming years. Back with more.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on this Thoroughly Jewish Friday. So tomorrow, as always, you've got questions, we've got answers. But the first hour, so you will not be getting that, all right? You will not be getting that live on your radio stations. Maybe one or two of you, not one or two of you people, but one or two of the cities will be carrying that hour as well. But otherwise, catch it live online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. My interview live in the studio here with Dr. John Lennox, professor of mathematics at Oxford University, brilliant man, committed Christian, debates the atheists. Did I say Thoroughly Jewish Friday? Did I say that? Or is someone just hassling me here? I said it. Thoroughly Jewish. Thursday is today, Friday is tomorrow. Man, this is twice in 2 days I've gotten the day of the week wrong. That happens. But I'm holding John Lennox's book in my hand, 7 Days That Divide the World, and I want to talk to him about it when he's in studio with me tomorrow. I'm thrilled as I see believers recovering the Jewish roots of their faith, recognizing Jesus is a rabbi, not a reverend. I'm thrilled when they recognize that Christ simply means Messiah. I am thrilled when they have a burden to see the Jewish people hear the message of salvation. I am thrilled when they recognize that there's validity to the biblical calendar to this day, not in a mandatory way, but in a way inviting and saying, this is prophetic history unfolding. This ties us to the past as we look ahead to the future. At the same time, as I talk about trends to expect, at the same time, I am expecting ever-increasing fringe groups to rise up and to capture the hearts and minds of Gentiles and Jews alike who are followers of Jesus, who end up in deception and some even in outright apostasy. You say, well, how do we avoid that? Well, obviously, you stay in the middle of the stream. In other words, don't spend your time looking for esoteric teachings. Don't spend your time looking for new interpretations. Seek to deepen your communion with the Lord and the knowledge of the fundamentals, and then those things remain peripheral. Those other things remain peripheral as they should. Also, any place that does not exalt Jesus Yeshua as central to the glory of God the Father, any place that you don't have to have a cross, you don't have to have the image of a cross, plenty of messianic congregations, I mean, the great bulk, virtually all of them, aren't going to have a cross. And plenty of churches don't have a physical cross. That's not the issue. I'm talking about exalting him in praise and worship and adoration and preaching and making him central to the glory of the Father. If that is not done, that's a danger sign. If other things become more central, if talking about Torah becomes more central, if talking about Jewishness becomes more central, if talking about Israel becomes more central, that is a danger sign. It is God's will, it is the Father's will, Colossians 1, that Jesus, Yeshua, the Son, will have preeminence. That's the heart, mind, will, desire of God, and that is all to the glory of the Father. Also, any group that ultimately stops evangelizing Jewish people, has some theological reason why we're not to preach the gospel to Jewish people. Either Jews have their own covenant, or somehow they have this mystical belief, or whatever it is. And there's some reason why we should not reach Jewish people with the gospel and not share Jesus with Jewish people. That's another serious danger sign. That's another group that you do not want to be part of. So these are some telltale signs. Let me repeat. If Jesus is not central, if Jewishness becomes more important, if Torah becomes more important, well, no, Torah is Jesus. You'll hear all these arguments. I'm telling you. If the crucified, risen Messiah is not central to the glory of the Father, something is wrong. Something is amiss. If the greater emphasis is on Israel, if the greater emphasis is on the esoteric Jewish teachings, if the greater emphasis is on Torah, if the greater emphasis is on other Jewish literature, problem. Big problem. If the major emphasis in the preaching and teaching is not on the middle of the stream, deepening our life in God, knowing Him more intimately, becoming more like Him, and touching this dying, hurting world, if instead it's fringe stuff, fascinating, and that's the main diet, something is wrong. Like there's a new yogurt place opened up right by our offices here, and I went out yesterday and got myself it's one of these self-serve places. They're coming up more and more. So I do what I normally do. I went over to the chocolate and I put the chocolate yogurt in the little dish there. And then the one from there and loaded up with other chocolate stuff and then put some chocolate syrup on it. And one of our fire students from our ministry school was there and saw me and said, man, he said, you really do like chocolate. I said, well, look, I'm consistent, man. I don't compromise. It's one or the other. You know, we were joking about it. But yeah, I really like chocolate. But I understand that cannot be my whole diet or my primary diet. Okay? And obviously I cut back. Okay, but that's another story. That's another story. My point is this fringe, this fascinating stuff, that's not the main spiritual diet. So when the secondary or the tertiary becomes primary, something is wrong there. And when people stop evangelizing Jews, when people stop reaching out with the gospel to Jewish people, something is wrong. Now, we're starting our night classes here at Fire, everyone in the greater Charlotte area, January 24th. That's a Tuesday night, inexpensive for an 8-week class, but high quality, 2 hours of teaching every Tuesday. And I'm going to talk about contemporary gospel deceptions, distortions of the gospel. That's going to be from another angle, but if you're in the area, I think you'll greatly benefit from that. I'll be talking about that more in the new year. But as God is moving, see, you're going to have both sides, the good and the bad. As God is moving, as Jewish roots are being restored, at the same time, you're going to see these increasing fringe groups where the roots, the Jewish roots, Hebrew roots, alleged recovery becomes the main thing, and it's going to be Hebrew, it's going to be Aramaic, it's going to be a certain word and phrase, and most of the time they even get that wrong. And those things that get away from God's heart, which is to see Jewish people wonderfully born anew through faith in Jesus the Messiah, when they get away from that being a priority, something else is wrong. And we're here to help you. You've got questions? Seriously, we've got answers. This is not a game. We want to help you be strong in the Lord. One of the most important books I've written that ties directly in with this, that dispels so many myths and helps you get the heart of God for the Jewish people, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, The Tragic Story of the Church and the Jewish People, just $15, postage paid. So get a bunch of copies. I want to thank all of you who, as you've been ordering, have been sowing in with special year-end gifts. Thank you. It's such a blessing and helps us do the work of the Lord so much more effectively. Thanks for partnering with us. But call or order 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or you can order online, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. Our Hands Are Stained with Blood. Get multiple copies. Give them out to your friends. Give them out to pastors, leaders. It'll be well worth it. 1-800-278-9978. Another reminder, if you're in the greater Charlotte area, tomorrow night, Southern Evangelical Seminary, Dr. John Lennox, Professor Lennox, talking about Genesis 1. All right, my bottom line. It is good to restore the Jewish roots of the faith, as long as we realize that those Jewish roots point us to Jesus the King, Jesus the Messiah, Jesus the Savior, not just Yeshua the Jew, but Yeshua the Lord of all.